Welcome to this week's edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined as usual by Chris Baines. How's it going today, Chris?
I wish I could say I was doing better, given the Big 12 news earlier this week that they are not going to expand for some godforsaken reason, despite all the numbers pointing to the contrary. They, I guess, are just adamant at letting, letting everything stand pat for now and then let Oklahoma and Texas leave in about 5 to 10 years and just let the conference dissolve. I guess that's just what they're relegating themselves to.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. They are just willing to stick with the status quo for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't really understand why they didn't want to expand. Like, you can understand it from like ESPN and like Fox's perspective, because they don't want to air like South Florida versus BYU. But even then, that's still hard to and they didn't want to pay everybody all this extra money that they would have if they expanded. You got to think the Big 12 will still make more money with that. But I don't know. Overall, I just don't really understand why they went through this whole charade.
Yeah, there's so many strange elements going on there, right? Like, you know, this meeting was on the books for a while, and then a few days before the meeting, you know, it comes out that ESPN and Fox are adamant against them not expanding, which, I mean, if we want to go down that rabbit hole, I don't quite understand that. I mean, you know, if you're the Big 12 and, you know, Fox and ESPN are threatening you, you know, I guess in my mind, you know, if ESPN and Fox is threatening to pay them less over the course of the contract, if they add more teams, that doesn't make any sense to me, because I'm pretty sure there's a clause in the contract where they have to, you know, increase it by I think schools currently in the conference can't lose money under the current contract, but schools that come in, the West Virginia deal where they get paid, you know, a percentage less than, you know, a full membership, which makes total sense to me, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But also the fact that, you know, markets and with the markets and the money in college football, all of that's only increasing anyways. So, you know, you add Cincinnati, Houston, or BYU 10 years down the line, all of those teams in the Big 12 are probably going to make more money then than they would now anyway, just by the fact that the revenues and interest are always going up. So I guess there's so many different variables here. And, you know, the fact that, you know, the Big 12 forced all the presidents and ADs to sign non-disclosure agreements. They said there wasn't a vote taken, which kind of just, you know, slaps everyone in the face. People who the schools that actually put together presentations to actually get into the Big 12, and, you know, they spent tons of money on that. I guess I don't understand how dysfunctional the Big 12 is, but I guess we kind of know now coming out of those meetings. I mean, they're basically getting so much shit poured on them for this.
Especially with how McMurphy was reporting yesterday or the day before, how some of those Big 12 schools were told to go with the story that Big 12 expansion was unanimously against it. So it sounds like that's a whole nother like shit show in of itself.
It sounds like they just don't have any balls. They just have no ball. Like, the teams, from what someone was saying, I mean, just kind of reading through the tea leaves on Twitter, I guess, it's, you know, if you have, you know, there's 10 presidents in the room, you have three or four that are completely adamant for expansion, you're not really sure about the other six. If they kind of get the vibe, or the idea that the vibe of the room is going towards non-expansion, those four presidents just cave automatically and just go with the flow, you know, go with the crowd, whatever the crowd wants to do. In which case, it just astounds me that it took them 2 years to come to this final decision if they were going to cave that easily.
Yeah, like, the whole thing just seems like it was poorly thought out from beginning to end. And just completely trashed the AAC.
Like, yep.
like it really who really cares about the AAC, but I mean it just divided the league for the ever since the league was created. There were teams leaving for different leagues after 1 year. Then there was the Big 12, like dangling above the rest of the league members ever since. It's just been like a league where like they want to make it Power Six. But it's like really hard to make your league anything important when nobody wants to be in it.
It's almost like the Big East situation all over again, like probably on a much slower scale than what happened then, because it seems like the Big East just all of a sudden, you know, like West Virginia left, then TCU left, and then it all just kind of imploded in about a year. I mean, this is going to be stuff that's going to fester over the next 5 or 10 years, pretty much until, I guess who's the next conference that has their media rights coming up? It's like the Big Ten or something like that in 5 to 7 years. Whenever that happens, that's when you'll definitely see the Big 12 dissolve. But I guess if I'm the Big 12, you know, what's if you know that Oklahoma, how could they not know that Oklahoma and Texas have a foot out the door? And if that's the case, why wouldn't you backfill them with teams now to grow themselves and their brand in your conference and get to a point where you're like, yo, West Virginia now, where you're 5-0 and ranked and 2-0 in the conference. You know, West Virginia, we've been talking about this a lot. They went into the Big 12 with a head of steam. They fell off the mat for a little bit, but they've kind of rebuilt their team under Holgorsen, and now they're back to competing for a Big 12 title. I mean, wouldn't you want that now with a BYU, Cincinnati, or Houston, knowing that Oklahoma and Texas are going to leave eventually, so you kind of soften that blow down the road? But no, I guess they don't really care about that. They'd rather just have the conference implode.
Yeah, like in this weird, like no man's land where you just have to hope nothing happens with Texas and Oklahoma. Because if something happens with Texas, I mean, something happens with Texas Tech. Something happens with Oklahoma, something probably is happening with Oklahoma State. Like, so you're going to lose, like, four teams. It's just completely dividing the conference. And even, like, the AAC as a whole. Like, the league contract with ESPN runs out in a couple of years. And there was already rumors that Navy wanted out if teams left it. So who knows what would happen mm-hmm. with Navy at the end of this, who has become one of the, like, football pillars of the AAC.
Right. Yeah, and the thing about Navy, I mean, especially with Navy, I mean, they kind of hit the ground running as well. They've had no issues adjusting to this conference, and it makes Central Florida, it makes Connecticut, makes all the holdovers from the Big East look bad when, you know, brand new team Navy comes into the conference out of independence and just starts rolling people. But I guess for the AAC now, I mean, Scott, where do they go from here? I mean, not UC specifically, but, you know, with the American Athletic Conference, what do you do now? I guess if you're Mike Oresko, you're, you know, jumping for joy, but as a conference, how do you kind of deal with this?
That's the part I'm not really sure about. It's not like there was, like, one or two schools that were trying for the Big 12. It was half the league, like, from Cincinnati to UConn to Tulane. Like, to SMU and Houston, like, everybody was trying to get out of the league, except for, like, the teams you would think. Even East Carolina tried. So it's like, you just have to find something to bring the league together, at least for the short term. But I really don't know what that is, because, like, when you're not in the big group of five, or power five, you're pretty much on the outside, and when you're on the outside, you have to just try to make the best for yourself. I think they should try to do some sort of collaboration with the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Where they schedule, like, giant non-conference games every year. But, like, even then, I'm not sure how much that would actually help, besides guaranteeing at least one or two of your non-conference games was on, like, ESPN. But even then, that would require Boise playing a lot more East Coast games than they would probably want to. Unless they just played, like, Houston or the Texas schools.
Right. And I guess, you know, that kind of goes back to the old adage of, you know, you can't pick your family. And unfortunately, you know, teams, like you said, that are on, that were looking to get out, basically half the conference, I mean, they really have no choice but to kind of come together and just, you know, embrace the AAC for the next 5 to 7 years. I guess, you know, when you're looking at this conference, even though UC's, you know, hit some hard times recently, it's kind of encouraging that you have a school like a Houston, you know, taking the flag of the conference. Navy, like we talked about, South Florida, I mean, any of those schools could lose their coach. I mean, Tom Herman's probably going to leave after this season, but the fact that they are capable of, you know, rising into the top 10 and, you know, consistently being top 25 programs, I mean, that's pretty encouraging going forward if you're talking about, you know, competing against the P5 and trying to portray yourself as a P5 conference.
There was a point last year where the league had four teams ranked. I think something like that is something you just can't understate. But when it comes to like the actual big money making games, like you're really in a tough situation where, like, if you don't shoot for the moon like Houston did last year, make a New Year's Day bowl, like you're right, just stuck playing like mid December games that not a whole lot of people care about.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I don't know how much power they have over that, but and we kind of talked about, I don't remember if we talked about on the podcast or kind of offline or whatever, but they got to do something to improve the bowl games they're playing. I mean, they can't continuously, you know, the second place team can't continuously be playing like, you know, the winner of the Sun Belt. Like, they've got to start, you know, matching up AAC with Power 5 teams in the bowl games.
And just unfortunately for the league, like, they've really lost a lot of tie-ins that the Big East had, which is really putting them behind the eight ball for some of these things. It's like, no offense to San Diego State, but like, that's not really the team you want to be playing in a bowl game. You'd rather be playing an SEC team. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, going down their list of potential bowl games, they have the college football playoff as number one. That's probably not going to happen now. Well, actually, it could. It depends on how well, you know, Western Michigan and Boise State finish the season. But beyond that, you have, you know, the Alamo Bowl, I guess, against the Pac-12. You have the Russell Athletic Bowl against the AAC. ACC, you have the Texas Bowl against SEC, Liberty Bowl, SEC, Cactus Bowl, Pac-12, Armed Forces Bowl, AAC. You know, even though on paper you have, what, 5 Power 5 conferences, potentially 6 if you make it in the college football playoff, that's great on paper. But, I mean, in reality, we've seen in the past where, you know, there's a lot of moving and shaking with those bowls where, you know, even though they might select an AAC team, they might select a different Power 5 team to go up against, like the SEC in the Texas Bowl or the Pac-12 in the Alamo Bowl. So the AAC gets bumped by a Power 5 conference. I don't know. I feel like there should be something in there where they can kind of guarantee those spots. I know that's not easy. I don't know how all that stuff works, but they've got to do something to kind of improve those bowls. So at least, you know, at the end of the season, you know, strong teams in the conference can actually play for something other than just, you know, some random Sun Belt team.
Because just like looking through ESPN's bowl projections, like some of the AAC teams, they have Appalachian State, Arkansas State as opponents, Central Michigan, Florida International, Middle Tennessee, like, not the cream of the crop opponents you have. But outside of like the Armed Forces Bowl, as you mentioned, which is like a Big 12, Pac-12 tie-in. But like, even then, like, you end up in the situations where, like, if those conferences can't fill games, either because they have teams in the playoff and New Year's Day games, like, that's how you end up with the bowl fillers in some of these games, like we've seen in the past with the league.
Right.
Or you just get the extremely, like, unsexy matchups that, like, don't really move the needle.
And I guess that's part of that could be out of their control because, you know, if you have, you know, several Power Five teams that finish at like 6-6, you know, I guess they can't really do anything about that when the bowl goes for like a 6-6, I don't know, Virginia Tech over like a 7-5 or 8-4, you know, UConn or Tulsa or something like that. I kind of get that. That's outside of the Americans' control. But I mean, what they can control is, you know, getting those sexy teams into the top 25, so they are being talked about. So if you do have a 10-2 South Florida team that finishes, you know, ranked 22nd or something like that, they don't get jumped by like a 7-5 North Carolina team or something like that.
And then hopefully you avoid the matchups where it's just like, oh, somebody's got to play Wake Forest, and then it ends up being like your best team.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's, I guess that's outside of their control. I mean, inside of their control, I guess, you know, you pretty much just have to kind of play the hand you're dealt and just hope you can, you know, find team, you know, teams can find like those hotshot coaches like the Willie Taggarts and the Tom Hermans and stuff like they got to do something about the TV deal at least. I mean, they're pulling in less money now in the AAC than they were in the Big East. They've got to renegotiate that to get that up to like $5 or $6 million a year. I mean, it's just too small right now given what they're producing on a weekly basis in this conference. Like, football has definitely been holding its weight in that regard.
Yeah, and that's going to be pretty tough given what we've seen for some of the landscape of some of the lesser conference TV deals. We just have a Conference USA just whoring itself out for anything it can possibly get.
Yeah, what was it, like $500,000 per team a year or something like that?
And the AAC would think it would do better than that. But like in the landscape where it looks like that bubble is going to burst, at least like the contract ends relatively soon, they should find a good bounce back. But it would be really important for them to stick with ESPN. Because if the league ends up
on
CBS or even like Fox would probably not, they probably wouldn't go to Fox. So the Big East for basketball. But if you end up like on only CBS Sports, which is a pretty big factor in like some of the loss of interest of basketball, like just because not as many people have CBS Sports, I think that really could sink the league like a ton, especially nationally.
Well, I think it's killing the league too is because, you know, ESPN has the option to watch pretty much, I think it's pretty much every game on, you know, by their Watch ESPN app. So, you know, for the increasing amount of cord cutters out there like myself, I can watch anything on ESPN, and if UC's on there, I can watch it from my phone if I want to. CBS Sportsnet, apparently they have archaic technology and have not gotten to that point, even though they can stream, you know, March Madness games whenever they want in March. They still haven't figured out the whole structure on the CBS Sports side. I guess when they do that, it will become more appealing. But I mean, to your point, I mean, you can't do any better than ESPN as far as, you know, telegraphing your conference.
Because like you just know that if you're on ESPN, they'll at least cover you, like on the biggest platform there is. Because like they're not going to show, they'll show like the highlights from, you know, the 7 o'clock ESPN game on Friday night, but they're like less likely to show like the 7 o'clock CBS Sportsnet highlights unless there's like nothing else on.
Right.
Like, unfair to like the league, but it's just how it is. If you're not on ESPN, they kind of don't care as much.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're ESPN, you want to kind of promote your own games on your own network. I mean, you don't want to promote, you know, a CBS Sportsnet because all it does is send eyes to that other channel. I mean, they have exceptions, right? With like, you know, the Big 12 because, you know, they're on Fox Sports, but I mean, that is a power conference. You don't get those kinds of luxuries in the Group of Five. Unfortunately, you kind of do have to whore yourself out to ESPN whenever you can. And it says volumes when, you know, when the UC and Xavier were both going for, you know, new TV deals in their new conferences. You saw, like, the following season, even on the basketball side, I mean, the eyes that were on UC's games on ESPN were just worlds above what Xavier's were on Fox Sportsnet. I mean, even in, like, the Cincinnati market, I mean, having ESPN as your medium for projecting your brand to the masses is really important nowadays.
It definitely, just even look at the way the Big or ESPN like covers the Big East basketball. It's a lot less than they cover the SEC or any of the other leagues. And you're that's right. Like the Big East, which had Villanova was the national champion and like a top 10 team all year. Xavier was really good last year. But and, like they get less coverage even though they're good because they're not on ESPN. So, like, that stuff definitely bleeds through, and, like, loss of viewership makes you seem less important.
Exactly. I mean, we talked about this, like, a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's difficult when you're in the group of five and you start to kind of slip, you know? As soon as you're not, like, the number one team in the conference, you know, people don't really start talking about you anymore. It's even worse when you're on, you know, a network no one watches anyways. I mean, you want to be top of mind as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, if you're not in the picture, you're done. Like Boise State last year, they lost a couple of games early and nobody talked about them ever again.
Right.
Which, like, makes them, like, nearly impossible to get to the playoff, even if they go undefeated. Because they had a bad year last year, even though they won 9 games. Like, they just don't have a chance for the playoff, and that's what happens when you're in one of these leagues, where you don't
exactly
have any chance of competing with the big boys unless you go undefeated back-to-back years. And even then, they'll think you're a fluke.
Right. Exactly. And that's kind of the problem, is because you're kind of, you know, in the group of five, you're kind of guilty until proven innocent, right? I mean, people don't think you're made of anything until you actually go out there and prove it, like a Houston did or like a South Florida's been doing. And you know, as soon as you slip up any little bit, you know, they're going to jump all over you.
So how quick did it take Houston to fall off the pedestal this year? They lost to Navy and now they're pretty much like nobody cares.
Oh, nobody talks about them at all. Yeah, as soon as they're undefeated, they're done.
And they're still in the top 10.
Like, no one talks about that with, like, Louisville. I mean, I guess that's because they have a Heisman winning quarterback. Lamar Jackson's going to win Heisman. You know, after they lost to Florida State, they're still 5-1 and people are still talking about them. People are still talking about Florida State, even though they're 2-2 in the AAC. It's just different when you're not, you know, in the, you know, keeping up with the Joneses in the Power Five.
It's the margin of error is so huge, where if you lose, you're pretty much kicked to the curb, and nobody thinks
right.
You're interesting anymore. Which is
right.
Just completely damaging to the league.
Right. So, I mean, I guess going forward, if you know, for me, I'm not that excited about missing out on the Big 12. I mean, I wish we could be, you know, counting our cash right now. I wish we could, you know, pull the trigger on a fifth third renovation, you know, yesterday and have the money already available via, you know, future Big 12 media money. I wish we could have a, you know, a brand new sparkling head coach who's going to lead us into the promised land. But, you know, right now it is what it is. And for better or worse, it seems like the AAC is the best group of five conference, top to bottom. It's unfortunate that UC isn't among the top of the conference right now. We can get into that in a little bit, but it's not going to be horrible going forward. I would just hope that they get better bowl games and then they can, you know, get more media revenue somehow down the road.
I think the best thing for the AAC, just compared to the Mountain West, is like they're on the East Coast, so people will actually watch their games, unlike the Mountain West, which like helps so much of that West Coast bias.
That's a great point.
San Diego State is pretty good. Like, they have, like, probably the best running back in college football, but nobody ever says anything about San Diego State because their games start at 10:30 and nobody watches them.
Right.
Like, you know, you have to become a national brand like Boise to get people to care about you on the West Coast.
Even then, though, I mean, even when Boise's, you know, up there, you know, in like the top 20 or top 10, it's people still don't really watch their games, right? I mean, unless they're on the road. Like, to your point, I mean, the games start at like, you know, a 7 o'clock start in Boise, Idaho is like 10 o'clock on the West Coast or on the East Coast.
It's definitely a huge boost for the AAC. Like, at least you end up with the good spots on ESPN. That's much,
right.
Or at least nationally, where you're in the mix. It's like, we would make fun of the ESPN News Game of the Week all the time, but at least having that ESPN News spot means you're on one of the ESPN channels. Every
exactly.
time they show the, here's what's on ESPN thing, like, you're at least your teams are on there.
Right. Right, exactly. And, I mean, you know, your fans can, you know, watch you over their phone. They can, like, switch it over on their computer. They don't have to necessarily have to be in front of a television to watch your game. And, you know, if something happens where, like, you know, let's say, you know, UC's about to upset Houston 2-3 weeks ago, you know, the casual fans will be able to get that notification, just, you know, flip to wherever they're at. They can flip right to that game. And then you bring in more viewers to see your team. I mean, it's really important to be on ESPN for that reason.
Yeah, 'cause they're definitely the best set for it, the digital crossover. 'Cause the Big Ten, like, their app isn't that great. And I doubt that many people outside of, like, the Big Ten know about it. And that's the only other power conference that has, like, their own thing where you can watch their games.
Yeah, I think I only downloaded the app to watch, like, the UC Purdue game, and then just immediately deleted it, like, 30 minutes after the game was over.
Yeah, I wonder if that app will be in more use when they end up off ESPN next year or the
right.
year after. Anyway, nobody cares about that talk. Nope. Let's switch bases a little to this current week. Cincinnati hosts East Carolina on Saturday night. Cincinnati, a 1.5-point favorite. A toss-up game.
Woo.
A toss-up game, pretty much. UC's biggest chance to win, according to the computers. What are your, like, initial thoughts on this game?
I'm glad it's at home, and that's pretty much about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. At least, like, they have it at home.
Like, I guess if you're UC and, you know, you just watch yourself, you know, implode on the road against a very bad UConn team, I mean, you have an offense that can't score a touchdown against UConn, scored 0 points in the second half against them, and then you have to face, you know, Phillip Nelson and was it Zach Jones, like the best receiver, you know, quarterback, one of the best quarterback receiver combos in football, and you're expected to keep up with that offense? The only thing that's holding them together is the fact that they get them in Nippert Stadium.
East Carolina's just not great. They've lost four in a row. They're 2-4 right now. They did get the lucky break. Not really a lucky break. They got the unfortunate good fortune of getting their game last week canceled, so they're coming off a bye week as well. And not having to play Navy before they played UC, which is, I gotta think, a significant boost for East Carolina.
Right.
Even then,
I mean,
like,
I guess.
Go ahead.
I guess, you know, when you kind of look at that matchup, it's like, you know, they both kind of had bye weeks going into this game, which, you know, typically favors the home team, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, Scott. I don't feel good about this game. I don't feel good about the season right now. I mean, they just lost to UConn.
It's not like you can point to their home results and be like, oh, look how much better they are at home. when they barely beat Tennessee Martin, got blown out by Houston, could have easily lost to Miami and got blown out by South Florida. Like, that's your home slate this year.
I mean, the fact is that, you know, I think, you know, what we were kind of talking about before we actually started recording, I think the only reason why UC is favored at all in this game is just because they are getting that, you know, the 3 points by being the home team. I mean, East Carolina lost, you know, 20-15 to South Carolina, 54-17 to Virginia Tech, 47-29 to Central Florida, and 38-22 to South Florida. Not a good team. You know, it's hard to tell who's worse right now, East Carolina or Cincinnati. They're both 0-2 in the conference. But based on those losses, it seems like the Pirates are the worst team, but UC's only favored by 1.5 points.
Cincinnati's
probably because they're home team.
Yeah. Well, Cincinnati's 0-3 in the conference. But yeah.
What did I say?
You said they were 0-2.
Oh, okay. Either, I mean, regardless, they're defeated in the conference.
East Carolina would have also been 0-3. There was no way they would beat Navy. But
right.
I think for the East Carolina advantage, they'd played every week this season. So this was their first bye week. So I think if they were gonna have play better, it would be because of that. But their defense is one of the dirt worst in the country. Like, it's ranked low in the 120s by pretty much every metric and pretty much every category. She mentioned they give up a shit ton of points. They give up a lot of yards. So you could imagine when they give up 50-some-odd to Virginia Tech and South Florida ended up running all over them. Like, so this is a defense that you can definitely exploit. And an offense that does put up yards. And they put up kind of yards UC does because they're also terrible at starting field position and opponent's field position. Like, East Carolina starts at the 24 and their opponents start at the 35. Which, when your defense isn't that good, that's a gigantic disadvantage. And they turn the ball over a ton, like one of the worst marks in the nation. They're -9 in turnovers. So this has all the makings of a shootout.
But do you really think it's going to be a shootout?
I do think it's going to be a shootout, because I don't trust East Carolina's defense or Cincinnati's defense to get many stops or stop many big plays.
I guess I just don't see it. I mean, the offense, I mean, yeah, this is definitely tailor-made for this offense to finally wake up after, you know, six games. But I don't know. I just don't see them, you know, scoring more than a few touchdowns. Like, I think it's probably, you can probably bank on them getting, you know, yeah, two or three touchdowns just by jogging onto the field. But I mean, you don't have your regular field goal kicker is gone. You know, you have freshmen who are kicking off and kicking field goals and extra points. The offense we've seen has been just putrid. I mean, even against the worst defenses. And I don't know. I don't know if they can even hit that 38 point mark they put up against Purdue.
You gotta think, if they were going to break out offensively, it'd have to be against East Carolina. Like, their defensive line is garbage. Their secondary's not good. Their linebackers have been their best players. So, like, we kind of saw that against, I believe it was Houston. Like, their linebackers had a monster game against UC. But like, if your offense is gonna break out, at least break back to some sort of normal mode where you're not
right.
Struggling to score 20 like they have the last two weeks. Even the last 3 weeks, they've really struggled to put points on the board. Like, it'd have to be against East Carolina. And, like, on the flip side, like, you know, East Carolina's going to throw the ball a ton. Like, Phillip Nelson's already thrown for 1,800 yards. You mentioned Zay Jones. He has 840 yards and 84 catches already. He has 111 targets. So, like, you have
this
to
is nuts.
Yeah, you have to cover that guy at pretty much every expense.
And, you know, good news that UC has, you know, one of the best cornerback combos in the conference. I mean, they never break down. They never bite up on play action. They always tackle appropriately. I feel like this is going to be a shootout, but I feel like UC is going to be the one that's going to be playing catch up, unfortunately.
Are you expecting a modest shootout in this one? It sounds like you think it will be a shootout to like 30.
So yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. You know, modest shootout. Like, yeah, the teams are probably going to end up in 30s or so. But I think there's going to be times where, you know, UC is going to go into their, unfortunately, what's become typical now, their slump where they just can't even get a first down. I think we're going to see, you know, their fair share of that on Saturday as well, just because the offense is just that bad.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of weird how like the way they just mirror, because that's been East Carolina's like biggest problem as well, is like actually finishing. Because high flying, their offense has been like they don't score a ton of points for as many yards as they put up, like 22, 29, 17, 15 the last few weeks, coming off a pretty impressive win against NC State. It's like, you know, they have that kind of performance in them, but they've just been playing so terribly lately. It's like really hard to get a handle on this game. I think it's first to 30 wins the same way you do.
I think that's probably a good point. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it is exactly that. You know, first is 30 wins, and at that point it's basically it's not really about stopping the other team on defense, but basically just slowing them down enough so they burn enough clock that the clock runs out.
Yeah, because it's like we know East Carolina is going to throw a ton. Like their leading rusher is technically a receiver, and James Summers is listed as a receiver. Like, he's only got 367 yards. So if you have to shut down the passing game and get some pressure, which we've seen UC do. So maybe if you're looking for bright sides, that's the bright side there. So maybe they can get some pressure on Philip Nelson, at least knock him on his ass a few times, and hey, maybe something good works out.
Yeah, maybe Mike Tyson will pick off three passes again. You never know. I just don't feel good about this game. It's again on CBS Sportsnet. I will not be able to watch it. I'll try to follow it out long as best I can. Probably listen to Dan Horde and Jim Kelly on the radio. I just don't have a very good feeling about this game like I have the last couple of games.
You famously did say that you were not very positive about the UConn game, and that ended up coming to fruition when they did not play very well at all against UConn.
Yeah, I really wish I was wrong. I really wish that was just like a nagging, you know, intuition that just wasn't ever going to come to fruition. And unfortunately, we are at where we're at. We're 3-3, and we have struggled to even come close to winning a game in this conference.
I think it's kind of a toss-up where playing at home does help. Because, like, who really knows what kind of atmosphere it's going to be on Saturday night? Everybody says, like, oh, night games at Nipperit, but we've seen night games at Nipperit where the crowd just doesn't really care. Like thinking of, like, the Memphis game or the Temple games a couple years ago. And if, like, it's a crowd like that where it's, like, the first bad thing that happens, like, they just face in hands. Like, that's not going to be the most encouraging place to play in front of.
Yeah, and you know, kind of good lead in there. And one thing I did completely forgot about. What do you think about that environment on Saturday? You know, they're supposed to. It's tailored as a red out. You know, so Ring of Red game for homecoming. But you know, there are some, you know, insurgents out there who are trying to black out homecoming. You know, in trying to rise. You know, as a rise up against, you know, Tommy Tuberville and his administration. What do you think it's going to be like on Saturday? Do you think there's going to be a lot of, you know, people wearing black? Do you think it's going to be empty seats? Do you think it's going to be, you know, a full-on redout? What do you think about that? Well, first of all, I don't know if you've heard about the whole blackout homecoming.
I've heard of the blackout homecoming. Okay. Because it popped up again after they did make the Big 12 too, but it's never a full red out or white out or blackout because they're very poor at getting the fans to wear the same colored shirt. But
true.
I think if we'd see more empty seats than we'd see a full blackout. But at the same time, if UC's trailing at halftime, fairly or unfairly to the players, but kind of fairly to the coaching staff, if UC's trailing, their boo birds are going to come out for sure.
Right.
That's just my... I can just picture it in my head. Like, they're trailing, I don't know, 21-10, and they get booed running off the field. Which is... Just really not fair to the players, because I don't think you should boo college players. But if like, you're booing Tommy Tuberville and the staff, that's kind of fair. But I think it's just weird booing a college team.
It definitely is, and I think... Given where we're at with kind of social media and the fact that, you know, fans and players can interact with each other now more so than ever, I hope that the message has gotten out there that when fans are booing, they're not booing the players or the recruits. They're booing Tommy Tuberville himself and, you know, to a lesser extent, his staff. I agree that I think if they are starting to get down, you know, 21-10, 28-17, something like that, and, you know, hope is looking lost. I think the boo birds will start to come out. I just hope that, you know, the context, you know, the players understand the context of those boos.
Yeah, hopefully. That's just a bad situation. But it happens everywhere when your team is not playing well and your coach is on the hot seat, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So,
go ahead. So I guess what do you think? You know, there's 40,000. Let's play the numbers game. There's 40,000 seats. Not really seats, but it holds 40,000. How many do you think are going to be in red? How many do you think are going to be in black? And how many do you think are going to be empty seats?
Ooh, I think there's going to be around like 30,000 there. That seems to be the baseline nowadays.
Yeah, so, I think. Okay, I agree. Okay.
So you should probably say like 22,000 in some sort of red. Then a third of the remaining crowd would be black in black shirts and trying to start chaos.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of on the same wavelength as well. Like, I feel like the fans who are most excited about this whole blackout homecoming thing are, you know, like the students and then, you know, the most adamant alums who you see on kind of social media like Twitter and Facebook and the message boards and stuff like that. I guess if you account for the students and all those people, it probably would come to about like 8,000. You know, and if they are really truly like passionate about it, I think you would see them in black and actually following through and actually wearing their black UC stuff. So I think you're right. I think, you know, 22 in red or some form of red, 8 in black, and then 10,000 empty seats is probably about right. I'm very curious what it actually ends up being and how it looks optically on Saturday. I mean, I won't be able to see it, but, you know, maybe if those of you who actually have CBS Sportsnet enlighten us. I almost got to. Are you going to be able to watch the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I will be able to. So I'll definitely keep you posted on that one.
Nice. Well, appreciate it.
But yeah, it's just going to be a weird situation. And like, what always happens with that stuff is if UC goes up 14-0 in the first two possessions, like nobody will do anything. Everybody will cheer.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be a nice, fun game.
Right.
But it's only if they come out flat and if they're not playing well, or something will happen. We'll get a stray fire tubs chant if they're closing minutes if they're losing.
Right.
And even then,
no, I think that's pretty much guaranteed at this point. Anytime they're starting to lose at the end of the game, there's going to be Fire Tubbs chance. We want Gunner chance or something.
I kind of think most of this stuff is just social media and not the actual fans going to the games.
Yeah, that part of it's I was kind of thinking about that as well. You know, part of it's just kind of the hype built on the social media and the fact that, you know, there's only a few knuckleheads out there. It doesn't necessarily speak to the broader fan base. But I feel like since we've had about 2 weeks to kind of – I feel like this Blackout Homecoming thing has actually been kind of sitting around since South Florida. But it's really started to kind of pick up momentum in the 2 weeks, you know, without any football because we had the bye week last week. I have a feeling it might be stronger than just a few people standing out there in black t-shirts. I just have that gut feeling.
I think maybe more down the line it could be. But for this game, I'm feeling a lot more like apathy than anger. I think
right.
for Memphis or even like BYU, which is like the last giant home game. Like where there's a chance for both of those games, actually, Memphis and BYU, where you could have like the opposing crowd kind of out loud your fans. I think mm-hmm. that could more be when we see the big dissension.
Yeah.
But like this one, especially being homecoming, it's made for a weird homecoming atmosphere.
Yeah, it's kind of like this odd, tenuous atmosphere that we're dealing with here. I don't know if fans in general are more excited for the game. You know, I feel like the whole idea of homecoming has kind of taken a backdrop to, you know, the issues with the coaching staff and where the season has gone and you know, kind of the animosity built up in the fan base. It's kind of unfortunate, but it just is what it is.
It's like the part where I think this would be less, at least for this game, is because it's homecoming. So you get a lot of like the non-diehards like going to this game if they're going to any game this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like really, like the more casual fans base is definitely this game in Miami, which Miami's always a sellout. But I'm kind of interested to see where the attendance falls for this one. So attendance for South Florida, whatever they announced. A couple days before the game, I think it was like around 30,000. Ended up being like the actual attendance. There wasn't like mm-hmm. a big surge for South Florida to close, like we've seen in some of the higher profile games of the last few years.
Right. Yeah. Maybe in that sense, 30,000 is probably is too high for this game. Maybe they actually only get about 25,000 in the seats. I don't know.
It's kind of hard to say because East Carolina is not that great an opponent. Like, there's a lot of turmoil in the fan base, and when you see it's kind of not great, we've seen people not show up. Like, you know, no matter who's
right.
the coach, no matter if they like the coach or not, if things aren't going great, the people aren't going to go to UC games.
Right. And especially, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, bouncing back against, you know, if you're 3-3, you know, kind of going back to the first part of our conversation, if you're 3-3 and you're going up against, you know, a UConn or an East Carolina at home, I mean, fans aren't really going to get excited about that. But if you're 3-3 and playing like a Texas at home, well, hell yeah, people are going to come out to see Texas or Oklahoma. I mean, again, not to go back to the first part of our conversation, but I mean, that's what you're kind of missing when you're not in the Big 12. And you know, this is why winning in the group of five is so important nowadays. You know, the wins matter more than the opponent now that you're kind of in the second tier conference. But we don't have to go back and revisit that. I mean, what are your predictions for this game, Scott?
Against probably my better judgment, I'm optimistic about this one.
You're always optimistic. Stop being optimistic.
It's just because I don't trust East Carolina. And Philip Nelson is listed on the injury report. He is probable. If something happens to them, their backup quarterback, Gardner Minshew, but his real name is not very good. And if they have to force him into action, UC should have a pretty good chance to win. But I kind of think it's going to be a high scoring or higher scoring game. I'm going to go 34 to 28, where UC scores late and covers the small spread. At least all the both games against East Carolina have come down to the gun.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that is true. I mean, better for better or worse, that both. Yeah, every time they play East Carolina, it's always, you know, very last couple of plays that actually decides it. I agree. I think it'll be about 34-28, but I think it'll be East Carolina ahead. You know, even though you made a great point about Philip Nelson, he may or may not play, probably will play. It sounds like East Carolina also has a lot of issues from injuries coming into this game as well. But they have had a week off. UC's offense is just dog shit. It is terrible. I don't trust the cornerbacks to cover the Nelson Jones combination. I think it'll be about, like you said, 34, 35, 28. And I think it'll be UC kind of clawing back to make it more respectable at the end of the game. I think I have a bad feeling that it's going to be something like 34, 31 to maybe 21 or 17 going into the fourth quarter. And then UC just kind of makes it respectable late.
I think that would be the worst case scenario, is you fall down that hole.
But is it, I mean, no, given what we watched this scene, is it that out of the realm of possibility?
Oh, no, he's definitely not. I just think that'd be the worst case scenario. You fall behind, and then you have to make Hayden Moore lead the comeback.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at least from what we've seen this year, like, when you make UC pass, that's when the offense dies.
Right? Yep.
For whatever reason, like, they can't pass protects consistently, and like you'll get big plays from Devin Gray and Nate Cole, like, and Khalil Lewis. Like, one of those guys is definitely breaking a 60-yard touchdown in this game, but like, just consistency drive to drive has been the biggest part for the offense where they've just struggled all season long. And if you fall behind double digits, like, that pressure really seeps in. And like, we've seen in the last couple of weeks where just one thing goes wrong and the team just sinks. So hopefully that it doesn't happen for the Bearcats in this one.
Yeah, and that's kind of the issue, right? It's like, you know, as soon as something goes wrong, it just seems like the bottom drops out. And I guess, you know, when you're playing an offense as prolific as this, it can turn on a dime, because all of a sudden, if you're starting to throw, again, those turnovers, you know, inside your own 30-yard line, I mean, East Carolina can turn those into points like that. And then it can just spiral like it did against South Florida and Houston. That's kind of my concern. That's your exact point is my problem with this game, is that, you know, Hayden Moore is going to have to put the weight of the game on his shoulders, and then he's going to implode. And they're going to do that bullshit quarterback carousel thing again, where Tuberville puts in Ross Trail for a couple of hands off, subs out for Gunnar Keel to hand it off on third down, and then they punt or something. I just feel like we're repeating this same insanity week after week, and until I actually see it different, I have a hard time trying to pick against the norm.
I know I'm
being a Debbie Downer here, but that's just how I feel. I don't know. It's raining outside. I don't know.
But it is understandable because, like, really what we've seen from this team has been, like, so up and down, inconsistent, where they just give away phases of the game, where it's hard to trust them to play a full game because they haven't played a full game through half of the season. Like, East Carolina is not great. Like, we know this for sure. Like, but there's, when you have two not great teams playing, like, you would think UC's talent would outgun them. But at the same time, like, the best win of the, you know, five that they have combined is East Carolina's over NC State.
Right. And that was, you know, a month and a half ago or whatever it was.
So you have the battle of the team who hasn't beat anybody outside of the, you know, bottom of the barrel against a team that hasn't won since September 10th.
Right.
CBS Sports, jump in.
Yeah, come on, everyone. Join us on CBS Sports to watch this dumpster fire of a game. Well, do you have anything else to talk about with this game? Because I've just kind of, you know, spiraled myself into a sense of depression on a Thursday.
That's pretty much where I went to.
Okay, perfect.
Just looking through the rankings, both special teams garbage. So maybe something weird will happen on special teams.
Yeah.
Instead of recapping the AAC games from last week, let's just run through the league as a whole, since we're halfway through. Just see like where things stand, what your expectations were, and where they are for the rest of the year. South Florida, 3-0 in the league, 6-1 overall. Pretty much unchallenged, it's going to seem, at the top of the East. They do have a couple of tricky games left. But they do play Temple this week, I believe, which would be a gigantic game.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this is it for them. I mean, if they basically beat Temple, they don't have to worry about the rest of their schedule because, I mean, they're playing three teams. They have four teams left on their schedule, and three of them are from the AAC West. They could conceivably lose those games and still sneak into the AAC East, you know, championship. Or AAC championship.
Although they do run the risk if they lose. Temple, their remaining schedule is Cincinnati, UConn, Tulane, East Carolina. They could steal.
True.
They could steal. True. The league. As inconceivable as it could be, Temple could steal the league if they upset South Florida.
That is true. South Florida is never not gonna fall on their faces. Like, you'd have to have like Quentin Flowers and Marlon Mack simultaneously, like, you know, have food poisoning for the next, you know, 2 months for them to like completely fall on their faces.
Yeah,
which is not gonna happen. I mean, it's South Florida. I mean, you never know what they're eating down there, but I mean, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, like the division as a whole, and at least especially the top, is pretty much come down to what everybody thought preseason, where it'd be come down between Temple and South Florida. And if once South Florida, you would think they're big favorites against Temple, for obvious reasons. Like, they do play Navy, Memphis back-to-back. But, like, you gotta think, with the way they've been performing and just outscoring everybody, they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they're on a roll. There's like no way that they lose that crown. They could, yeah. I mean, you're right. They definitely could. It seems like the games that Temple are playing versus like South Florida. It seems like they're a lot more backloaded with Temple. You know, having to face like basically everyone below them in the division going forward. So they could potentially sneak their way in, but doesn't seem that way right now. Like, South Florida's passed the eye test, and they'd have to completely take their trajectory off a cliff to change that.
It's Temple, pretty fortunate to even be in the spot they are now with their miracle comeback against Central Florida.
And if you have to, you know, say miracle comeback against Central Florida on your resume, then you're not having that great of a season. You're having an okay season, but it's not great.
It was revenge from the miracle Central Florida comeback a number of years ago with Bortles.
Right. Right.
Though, much less satisfying.
Yeah, because I actually didn't learn about that until you just mentioned it 15 seconds ago.
Speaking of Central Florida, they sit at 1-1. 3-3 overall. Kind of an interesting team, we were kind of optimistic. I remember talking about them before the season started. We were kind of optimistic that Scott Frost could turn it around, but I don't think either one of us thought he would turn it around this quick, where they'd be a 500 team and look like a decent team. Like, they've moved from like historically terrible to decent, like pretty quick.
Like, they're not a bad team. Like, I mean, they got blasted by Michigan, you know, in the opening weekend, but, you know, they're not really, you know, that bad overall. I mean, their defense is like one of the best in the division. I mean, they've only played, I think they played one less game than everybody else, but they're, oh no, they haven't. They played six games, but I mean, regardless, I mean, their defense is solid. I mean, you never really would have thought, you know, the Oregon offensive coordinator taking over as head coach would make an impact defensively, but I guess it does. I'm not sure what they exactly did down there, but you know, there's just another team in the conference that just got a lot better all of a sudden, and now we have to deal with them at the end of the year. Yeah, they're not bad. It's, you know, overall good for the conference, bad for UC right now.
You're looking at a situation where, like, we talked about that at the beginning of the year, like, if any stumbling blocks, that Central Florida game could be one, because who the hell knows about Central Florida? But right. Now it looks like it could be a stumbling block for a different reason, because, like, they're a pretty solid team. Like, outside of getting their doors blasted by Michigan, they went to overtime with Maryland, double overtime, I believe. Then, like, they pretty much handled their business. Like, they had a big defensive stand against East Carolina to win that game on the road. Like, their schedule's not really that difficult. It's kind of difficult. They play Houston and South Florida both on the road. It's like, but the possibility of them making a bowl game are pretty, like, pretty in the ballpark, which you wouldn't have expected coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought they would kind of took the trajectory of, like, an SMU where they needed, like, I mean, hell, they went 0-12 last year. You thought they would have taken, you know, a few years to come back, but yeah, they definitely have a bowl game in their sights this year. And then next year, I mean, who knows? I don't know what they have. I don't know the makeup of their team, but I mean, next year they could compete for the AAC East Championship. I mean, especially if, you know, Willie Taggart gets hired away or Matt Rhule finally gets dragged out of Temple. You just never know.
That's just another, like, point in the column of where, like, you have to make a big flashy hire and, like, get your program on the right track. Because if you suffer any down period, like, you end up out of the conversation, and things never really crater out, like, as much as they did last year. But, like, if you can get yourself back to decency and get back to relevancy in a couple of years, that's such a huge swing. Because you don't want to end up where you're just in the middle. You want to be on the top.
Right.
Connecticut, they're 3-4 right now. They just got blasted by South Florida. Do they make a bowl game?
Who do they have next?
Central Florida at East Carolina, Temple at Boston College, Tulane to end their season.
It's hard for me to tell. My gut says no because they're UConn, but then I feel like UConn's always that team that just somehow finishes 6-6. They just that's just their MO. They do what they have to do at the end of the season to either lose games to get to 6-6 or win games to get to 6-6.
I kind of feel 6-6 for UConn. I don't know why.
It's just like the 6-6 team. It's like, you know, they're the token 6-6 team in the conference. Like, they're never good enough to be better than that, but never bad enough to be worse than that.
And, like, they're like kind of the team, like, you don't want to be the UConn, where you're just, like, always, like, not in the mix. You want to be, like, fighting for the top. You don't want to be, like, oh, they're decent.
Right.
And, like, I think that's the worst thing for the UC program right now, is, like, you're stuck in the they're decent part instead of they're fighting for the championship every year part.
Right. I guess in the broader scheme of UConn, I mean, do you think Bob Diaco survives after this year?
If they make a bowl game, I think he does get another crack at it.
You think so?
I think so.
I mean, he's, 11-21 there? He went 2-10, 6-7, 3-4 this season. I guess he is in his third year. But I don't know.
I think they'd have to take such a step back for him to get fired.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
It seems like they would give him as much rope as he needed.
Right. I mean, especially the administration probably has to know that it's hard to recruit at UConn. I mean, you have no recruiting base, and you know, who really wants to go to Connecticut to play football? And you're in the group of five.
That's a pretty big it's a pretty big one. Getting people to go to UConn for football is really tough. Like they have to be really disappointed that they didn't make the Big 12. See, if anything was going to boost that program, it would have been getting into a power league.
Right.
Although what we've seen from Rutgers, they made a power league and their program is terrible.
They can't score points, which is kind of important in football, is what they say. I might have to like take a couple weeks to verify that, but I'm pretty sure that's a fact.
Let's jump to the West, where Team UC hasn't played at all. It's Navy. Navy in the top 25, one to two ranked teams. In the top 25, just off the back of beating Houston. They lost the week before to the Air Force. A pretty interesting team, a pretty big game against Memphis. Which we can talk about both of those together. But Navy's 4-1, Memphis 5-1. Both lost arguably the best quarterbacks in school history, well, recent school history for Navy, and probably full school history for Memphis. I think you'd probably argue Keenan Reynolds was the best player in Navy history.
Yeah, probably. I guess it depends on how Paxton Lynch does in the NFL. That might boost himself a little bit.
Like both have gaudy records. Outside of the Houston game, neither one has really proven themselves, I guess you could say. Memphis only loss was to Ole Miss, but they played no one else in the non-conference, and their only conference games were against Temple and Tulane. They both won close games. Do any of these teams like have a legit chance to unseat Houston, or do you think they'll both fall apart?
Given what Navy did to Houston 2 weeks ago, they have a. I mean, they don't have an especially easy slate, but it's not exactly difficult in the conference. I mean, they play Memphis, South Florida. I mean, that's going to be a tough game, but I mean, it won't be relevant to them in the West. Tulsa, East Carolina, and SMU. I guess I wouldn't doubt them to run the table. I mean, they beat Houston. I don't know. That's a litmus test that they take.
They are a home underdog to Memphis. Like, as you mentioned, like the Memphis South Florida swing the next couple of weeks of their season. If they even split it, like they have the tiebreaker over Houston. Like you wouldn't think they would lose to Tulsa, East Carolina, or SMU, especially since they play
Right.
Tulsa at home. It's like you could see a potential conference championship game of Temple and Navy, which is what everybody wants to see.
Right.
Memphis, oh, go ahead.
That would be a nightmare. I think of the two, I would probably lean towards Memphis. I guess it would depend on who wins this weekend, right? I don't know. I mean, I feel like with Navy's schedule, they have USF on the road, even though it doesn't, you know, affect them in the conference. I don't know. I would say whoever wins the game this weekend has the best shot of actually officially unseating Houston. I mean, Navy has the inside track though, which kind of leads me to believe that it's Navy the one who's going to just run the table. Like, if you already proved yourself against the best team in the conference, what's saying you can't run the table? I feel like that you have house money at that point.
And Memphis, like for high flying as their offense was to start the year, they've come down to earth in league play, which is a bit surprising. So you gotta like their finishing kick is really strong with South Florida, Cincinnati, Houston. So like this feels like a big test for Memphis to see how legitimate they actually are,
Right.
and for Navy if they win, like their path for the for the division is like almost got a thing set.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, if Navy basically wins, they have the, you know, they have the leg up on the or on the division by two games pretty much.
Let's talk about Houston a little bit. They haven't looked that great lately. Like, they got a gift against Tulsa where the officials just blew that whole end of the game scenario. I guess there's not really too much to talk about here since they're obviously really good. But do they run the table or do they lose the rest of the way?
Ooh. You mean in conference, or are we counting Louisville?
Just in general, counting Louisville.
Oh, I want to say they don't. I want to say they lose Louisville. I don't know. I think they could run the table in the conference. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I mean, hell, they have SMU on the road, Central Florida at home, Tulane at home, and then they're really only tough, you know, road game is Memphis. I think they run the table in the AAC. I think they lose to Memphis at home. Or, sorry, Louisville at home.
I kind of feel the same way. Although, that Louisville game does look like a toss-up. And, like, just for, like, the league's sake, if they make the New Year's Six Bowl again, well, it would be a pretty big boost for the league. Although, seeing how that would come down if, like, Boise State does go undefeated, like, where Houston would end up if Houston would get passed by Boise State. It'd be a whole
right.
Interesting thing. It's where playing the Louisville game at the end of the season is so huge for them. Just because they get the chance to beat Oklahoma and Louisville. And Boise State doesn't.
Right, and then pretty much they have, you know, that nice, you know, top of mind win at the end of the season that they can point to. I guess I'm kind of rooting for Houston to run the table just because, you know, them getting into a New Year's Six Bowl is better for the conference and get some more money in UC's coffers. But I feel like there's nothing really on that schedule where I'm thinking that they really have a hiccup against, unless it's like Louisville, but I don't know.
There's no way they lose to SMU. And playing the other two games at home, you gotta think they would take care of business. It'd be that the game at Memphis would be if they were going to slip up. We've seen them play. Obviously, they lost to Navy on the road, and we saw them play, but kind of average against UC, though the margin was big. That game was in doubt in the fourth quarter.
Right.
So you can't really put it out of the realm of possibility that Houston may lose twice. I doubt they will, but it's possible, I guess.
Yeah, they definitely showed the chinks in their armor in the last couple of weeks, but I feel like every team kind of goes through that throughout the season, like especially once opponents start to kind of get film on you. I mean, everyone knows that Greg Ward is a running quarterback. He can't throw. He's an okay throwing quarterback. He's not going to kill you with his arm, but you know, most of the damage he's doing is on his legs, and you know, UC even showed that is once they pretty much contained him in the pocket, he couldn't really do much until the fourth quarter when UC pretty much imploded on themselves. I mean, Houston isn't a dominant force, but you know, I feel like they have the talent across the board to run the table if they wanted to. I can see them losing to Louisville. I think they might lose to Louisville, but I could also see them beating Louisville at the same point. I know that's kind of you know, the cop-out answer, but
you know, who knows? Maybe they're so upset about not making the Big 12 they lose to SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Herman just cries about his $5 million that he'll definitely get from some other team.
Right, right, exactly.
Although I do think it's kind of interesting that it's like as soon as they don't make the Big 12 Houston, like they're, the word is, like they're talking extension with Tom Herman already. Like, yeah, please don't leave us.
Exactly. Which, I mean, I feel kind of bad because I feel like we as UC fans have been here before. You know, when Brian Kelly was starting to get talks about going to Notre Dame, we were constantly saying, hey, yeah, we are, we're the ones who are going to, you know, pay up and, you know, make sure that he stays at Cincinnati. You know, we can definitely do that. And he just left anyway.
Yeah. No, because, like, money only goes so far. It's like, if you have, like, the prestige job, like, if a QB wants to be the coach of Texas or like LSU, like, he's going to be the coach at Texas at LSU. There's really nothing you can do besides, like, hey, like, take our money instead.
Yeah, please don't take all of your staff with you. Yeah, it's. I think Houston, they kind of, I mean, it would be irresponsible for them if they didn't at least, you know, throw up an offer. Because with all the money that they're pulling in now, you got to figure that they could pay him an extra $2 million a year.
And, like, yeah, it's like much as they poured in to try and get in the Big 12, like how much they've just been pouring into that program since he got there. It's definitely, I don't think it's really out of the realm to keep him. Like, I really thought if they made the Big 12, he would have stayed. But now I'm not really so sure.
Yeah.
Let's run through the last couple real quick. Tulsa, kind of an interesting team. Like, they played Houston really
scary tough. Team.
Yeah, their only two losses this season were at Ohio State, at Houston, which are not easy places to win. Their last couple of games have been crazy bananas. Like, they played a 48-41 game against Fresno, 43-40 game against SMU, 38-31 game against Houston. Their schedule does calm down a little bit between big games. Like, they play Tulane at Memphis, East Carolina at Navy, at Central Florida, and finish with Cincinnati. Like, how legit do you think Tulsa is? Or are you just not sure at all? Because I'm not sure at all.
I feel like Tulsa is that same team that they've always been with. They're guaranteed to put up points, but then, you know, the defense is always shaky. I feel like they're good for, like, 8 wins a season. I mean, they're already halfway there, and then, you know, to your point, they play, you know, Tulane, ECU, Central Florida, and Cincinnati at home. I mean, those are some pretty winnable games on their schedule. I feel like they're just bound to score a bunch of points like they always are. That's just their MO.
And it seems like their defense, like, for as not great as they've been, like, it seems like they have stepped up some.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a kind of a tough team to get a read on. But with that offense, you gotta think they're always in pretty good position.
Right. It must be nice.
Yeah. That game at Tulsa is gonna be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I remember when we talked before the season began where you and I were kind of on the fence about which game was going to, you know, kind of be the one that differentiates our win-loss total. I still have Tulsa as kind of my loss on the schedule. I mean, even more so now given how UC's been playing, but I just feel like that team is always just so sneaky good. Like, you know they're always going to put up points, but if you have a bad offensive night, they'll catch you.
Do you think if UC, we'll just play this forward real quick, if UC ends the year 5-7 losing at Tulsa, not making a bowl game, do you think that Tulsa could be the end for Tuberville?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I would say even if it was like, you know, they were, what, 6-4? No, well, it wouldn't be 6-4, like 6-5 going into that game. I think even at that point that would be enough to can Tuberville. Regardless of the outcome of that game.
Interesting.
Scott, I've so checked out on this coaching staff. It's unbelievable. I don't know. Like, after UConn 2 weeks ago, and if they lose again to East Carolina on Saturday, I'm just done with this coaching staff. I just don't care anymore about them.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of the more interesting teams in the league. Not on UC's schedule this year, but it's Tulane. Tulane, somewhat surprising, 3-3. No, they are 0-2 in the league. They've converted to the triple option, and they've been pretty competitive against everybody. Their only losses were by 7-3 to Wake Forest, 21-14 against Davie, 24-14 against Memphis. Like, they're another school that changed coaching staffs, and now like their program's looking like it's gotten like a breath of like new life at least.
Yeah, they kind of went the opposite direction that everyone goes nowadays. Like instead of going the whole spread them out, pass them around, you know, kind of offense, they kind of reverted back to like that triple option thing. And I mean, you're right. They've been competitive in every single game they played this year. I mean, you know, Wake Forest, they only lost by 4 points. They lost by a touchdown to Navy, 10 points to Memphis. And every other game, even though some of them have been gimmies, I mean, Southern, you know, Louisiana Lafayette and UMass aren't the best teams in the league or in college football. I mean, they're at least winning those games. I mean, they're winning the games they're supposed to be, and they're staying close in the games that they are underdogs in. And, you know, when you're a first-year coach, I mean, that's the best you can hope for. I guess unless you're like Tom Herman or something like that.
I think you could even argue though the loss up against Wake Forest even looks a little bit better since Wake Forest has proved to be like at least above average for Wake Forest lately.
Right.
Like so, like that's kind of an interesting program. It'd be interesting to see like where that program ends up in the next couple of years. Finally, SMU. They're still struggling, 2-4, 0-2 in the league. As mentioned,
they're like legitimately the only team we can laugh at now.
It's like, are they going to turn it around anytime soon, or is this just going to be more tough sledding for SMU?
I got to figure they eventually do, right? I mean, every dog has his day. I mean, the problem with SMU is that, you know, in the beginning of the season, your record's always going to be dog shit because you always play Baylor and you always play TCU. Unless you're like the SMU of like the Pony Express days, they're not going to, you know, be competitive on a year-to-year basis with Baylor and TCU. And then hell, I mean, you have Houston this week and you have, God, you have Memphis, South Florida, and Navy all on your schedule. I think they're playing better this season. It looks like they're more competitive game to game, but I mean the win loss record just isn't going to reflect it. They're probably still going to finish with only like 3 or 4 wins.
Yeah, the number June Jones did on that program just cannot be outstated.
Right.
He really set that.
Which is so surprising.
Back. He set that program back. Yeah, a solid like 5 to 7 years.
Right.
It seems like Chad Morris is doing like a good job, but just like on the on-field results have just been really hard to get.
Yeah, I think they eventually turn. I mean, it helps that SMU is located in Texas, where they can basically step out their door and find 5-star recruits growing on trees. They won't get them, but at least you know they know that they have the recruiting base right around the corner that they can cultivate. I just think that the schedule this season is just set up hard for Chad Morris to really succeed in his first season. They probably gave him a long rope, though.
Oh, definitely. As you mentioned, it's just a really tough schedule. And half their problem is going to be, half their success is going to be like just turning around and getting closer and closer and improving their effort every week.
Right.
Just so they'll be good, I think they come on the schedule again next year. So they'll be good next year, just because of course that's UC's luck,
right? Which just figures, doesn't it?
Of course, that's just where we are right now. No Big 12. They'll play whatever hot new team is tearing up the league, and we'll just keep reliving the nightmares of losing every AAC opener.
Right.
So
that's the nightmare we're at.
Is there anything else you want to get off your chest before we wrap it up this week?
No, I'm good. Hopefully they can turn it around starting this Saturday against CCU, but I wouldn't put money on it.